You bringing some goodies today for the show?
What I got right here is a Southern specialty. I want you to look at him. Cast iron.
Cast iron.
Crackling cornbread we talking about.
Mm-mm.
Collard greens.
Is that pecans or is that bacon?
That's crackling, son. Cracklings. Look at there. Whoa, let me show everybody what that looks like right there.
Collard greens.
Collard greens, cured, salted, fat back, and collard greens cooked in a cast iron, I ain't gonna say Dutch oven, little oven thing there, it ain't a Dutch oven. That thing there's been in our family for years and years and years. So what I wanna do is partake just a little bit. I don't know if you ever had any crackling cornbread, have you?
Explain to everybody out there that doesn't know what crackling cornbread, what that actually means.
Crackling cornbread is regular cornbread with pork cracklings in it. Pork cracklings is little thin slices of pork rind.
Uh-huh. That's a big old piece right there.
It is a big old piece. You ain't got to eat it at all, but you may want to. But that's good stuff.
Does it look like little pieces of bacon in there?
Well, sort of, kind of. It's got a different flavor to it. But that is what that is,
mm-hmm.
And you get your cornbread out.
We can't put it all in there together?
No. Ooh, look at that.
Mm. You bring any pepper sauce?
Nope, we're gonna eat just like it is.
Just like it is? Okay.
Ah, man.
You're getting excited.
I'm getting
you?
All excited, look at there.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh collard greens out of the garden.
You bring me a fork if I'm eating my caveman style.
You got a fork right here. There you go. Now, I'm going to tell y'all something, folks. If you ain't never had this right here, you don't know what you're missing out on. Now, she didn't strip them collards. She chopped them up. I say she, that'd be Miss Hoss.
Mm-hmm.
She chopped them up because that's the way most people do collards. They don't strip them. Now, we strip our mustard and our turnips and get that main vein out there.
I strip my collards.
Do you?
Yeah.
I have, but we didn't these.
You can and you can't. Those are pretty good, those tiger collards.
Mm-mm.
That's a fine meal right there.
I'm making a mess.
You are making a mess. I have to be careful. I'll forget we're shooting a show and just be wanting to eat the whole time.
Yep, for you folks that are in the South that know what I'm talking about, you know exactly what I'm feeling right now. But for you folks that maybe didn't grow up in the same time period we did, or you may not have grew up with collard greens, this is the new thing. You got to try this, and I guarantee you, it'll be a regular for you.
Well, they say collards is the new kale. Collards is all popular now, and good reason for it. They're good for you, and they're good to eat.
Look at that fat back right there.
And in the garden, that's one of the most productive crops you can grow is collards. I would add kale right up there. As far as how many harvests you can get off of them over and over and over.
You plant you a crop in the fall of the year and you can eat them all the way up to summertime.
That's right. That's right. Sure can. You can grow them around here, I'd say 9 months out of the year. And that's one crop. Now, I have planted two before. Sometimes in the spring, I'll plant me and go and get me another and going. Sometimes when they get real tall, that stem will rot out on you. So I always like to have some backups.
Yep. If you remember eating collards years ago and you didn't like them, you got to try them again. You can try them two or three times. Do you get the recipe down right that you like? It'll be pleasing to you.
That's good stuff. Let's say hey to everybody before we get any further in depth here. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're excited to have you with us tonight. We got a really good show planned. We're going to talk about seed starting a little later on.
Really?
And popular seed, or I wouldn't say popular, but frequent seed starting boo-boos, kind of what not to do as far as seed starting goes. So we're going to get into a little bit of that. Before we do, we always have our show and tell section where we talk about what's been going on in the garden. And weather's been seesaw.
80 degrees.
80 degrees, and then next week supposed to get down to 30 degrees. I'm gonna have to put something on. I gotta rig me something to put on my English peas because they just look too pretty to let a good frost come in and zap them. So I got to figure me something out. Old Danny on Deep South Homestead was doing something with his carrots using a little four-way connector and some PEX tubing that looked pretty slick. And I think I can throw something together pretty quick.
So
I'm gonna try that. And one thing with this getting real hot and then switch cold and then getting back hot again made me think, and this happens a couple of years ago, this kind of weather is terrible for your fruit tree fella. And a couple of years ago, we had this happen where it struck off hot and everything started budding, and then we got a hard frost. It was late February or March, and it heavily impacted the fruit crop.
Yep, it can happen.
So, got to watch out for that. It's been good for a lot of other stuff in the garden, but your fruit trees, it can, if they start budding too early, it could be problems.
Yep. What you got else? What we got down here?
What else?
We're going to talk about that.
We're going to get to them in a minute.
Jumping ahead of myself. These collars got me all screwed up.
We were going to talk about your guinea nest onions and the multiplying onions, but we got hung up on the collars. We will talk about those on next week's show.
Ooh, they doing good. They growing.
I did a couple videos this week fertilizing my onions. We had a lot of people asking how to put that easy flow together. And so we did a video showing exactly how to put it together, how easy it is. And then we got a video, or we had a video coming out on Wednesday showing how to use the ammonia sulfate. And one thing I noticed this time with that easy flow, and I knew it had an agitator in there. It's got the water that shoots in there. So as I put a whole, or tried to put a whole 10-pound bag of ammonium sulfate in there, because I had about 20 rows of onions to fertilize. And it was hard to get that much fertilizer dissolved in 2 gallons of water. But what I did notice is that I always thought I just had to dissolve it completely before I put it in there. But you could, if you've still got a little bit of granular left in there, that agitator will dissolve it on through. So it doesn't have to be dissolved completely.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So, okay. If you do run into a situation where I did where you need to put a lot in there.
I'm not sure it works with ammonia sulfate because I've never tried it, but I know with 20-20-20, warm or hot water helps dissolve.
It probably would. I don't have access to warm water out at my well, unless it's real hot outside. I got about a minute worth of warm water. But it did work through the rest of it. I had a little bit in the bottom I couldn't get dissolved in that 2 gallons. So good to know there. The next thing I want to mention, to make a little announcement, they've been asking me to do this for 3 or 4 years now, and I'm gonna finally go. I'm excited about going. So Deep South Homestead, who is a channel we've been watching and working with for a long time, one of the first ones we really partnered up with. They have this thing every March, I want to say, called The Gathering over there in South Mississippi where they're at. And
Sammy's wanting some collard greens.
Yeah, Sammy done snuck in here and she's wanting some of that bacon. Anyway, so they have this thing called The Gathering, get together for all their subscribers and stuff in South Mississippi there. And so I'm going to be going there this year. Me and my wife is going to make the trip. And so if any of our subscribers are in that area, we'll be there.
What area is that?
Perkinston, Mississippi.
Where's that at?
South Mississippi.
South Central Mississippi.
Central. It's a little bit, about 30 minutes above Gulfport from the research I've done on the map. So I'll be there. We'll have a few items. We'll be doing some door giveaways and some stuff like that. Have a little table set up. You can come chat with us or whatever. So I think you have to register for the event. There's a little link that they sent me. I'll try to put that in the comments below on the YouTube version of this. So you can go register there. I don't think it costs anything. Kind of bring your own lunch deal. But we will be there on March 21st. I will be. He's going to stay here. But I'll be there. And so if any of you guys are in that area and want to swing by, check out that link and sign up for that. How's that going over there?
That's good.
What's going over there?
That fat back, man, that's contagious right there.
One other thing in related to that. So I had I had a bunch of calls, or I won't say a bunch, but several in a short amount of time, people calling me and saying, why do you work with this channel? Why don't you work with this YouTube channel? Why are these people using your seeds? Why are these not? And just to kind of clear the air on that a little bit, that is not my decision. We contact pretty much every channel in the gardening and homesteading realm. Some of them have prior commitments that they don't want to kind of cloud that. And some of them just...
Some of them are just easier to work with. Amen?
Amen. Some of them are easier to work with than others. So if we're not working with a channel that you like to watch, I promise you it's not from a lack of trying. Some of them are just kind of anti-promoting other companies' products on their channels. And
we just trying to help. That's all we're trying to do.
That's fine. And that's fine. I understand that. A lot of these channels do get, because I read their comments, they get a lot of backlash from promoting or saying they use our stuff, which, yeah, I don't really get that. But some of them don't like that backlash. Some of them...
Look here, you got to get your seeds from somewhere. You got to get your tools from somewhere. You just well know where you're getting them from.
That's right. And know the people and have a personal relationship. All of our influencers, we have really good... I call them up anytime I need to, relationships, and we like it to be that way. So,
and they like crackling cornbread too.
They do.
All of them.
So if you have a channel that you like to watch that you think could use our products, let them know. Tell them to holler at us, and we'll be glad to work with them. Okay, so today we're going to talk about something that people have been asking about for a while, is us to do a show on seed starting, because it's seed starting season, it's seed starting time.
I had a fella call me earlier today down
in... Can you set that over there?
I will. Down in Florida, and he said that he was starting his seed. I said, whoa, a little early. Where you live at? He said he lived below Tampa. So you know what? It is time for him to start his seed.
Yeah, and it's been time for us to start. We did a few weeks ago, we started our, what I call early spring stuff, our cooler weather stuff.
He was talking about tomatoes and peppers is what he was
But we're not but a week or so out from starting peppers.
We ain't far.
So let me pull these out of here. So this, I don't got enough room there. So this is some Flame Star cauliflower that I just started a week or so ago. And I didn't get 100% germination on this, but pretty stinking
Well, where's an empty one at?
Right there's one. Right there's one.
Well, it will be.
There may be three empty ones there.
I'm looking about 99%.
Anyway, so we got these up and going good. And what we want to talk about today is how you can grow these at your own place. Growing your own transplants is economical. You also get to choose the varieties. If you go to the big box store, going to buy you some collards, you got to get whatever collards they decided to put out there.
If they got good-looking fresh collards.
That's right. A lot of times, those plants, even if they look good when you got there and bought them, at some point in time, it's likely that plant was stressed. And what you don't realize is that stress and early in the life is going to affect the long-term performance.
The reason I put in a greenhouse was on kind of tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I got tired of buying the Amelia, which was the only thing that was offered in our local hardware store that was virus resistant. I didn't like it, still don't like it to this day, but that was my only option. So I put my greenhouse in strictly because of tomatoes, and since then we have branched out. But to grow varieties that I want to grow, that was the way I was my way out right there.
And being outside in the big garden, working in there, harvesting stuff is fun. But I will honestly say one of the most fun parts of gardening is doing this right here, is doing seed starting and growing these seedlings and really being a part of the process from the very beginning, from the seed to the transplant to the final harvest. I really enjoyed it. I think in my past life I might have been
a greenhouse manager. It's one of my things too. So let's talk about soil, pot and medium.
It's seed starting mix.
Soil, seed starting mix.
Yeah.
One of the main things people think in their mind when they get started is, why can't I just dig dirt up out of the yard and put in there? Well, you can, but it ain't gonna work out well for you. It's too compact, it's not sterile, and it's just not designed or gonna work out well for you in this right here. You're a lot better off to buy a seed starting mix. Now the one we've used for years and years and years is ProMix. Now I know there's some other ones out there that's probably just as good, but we don't have access to them. We do have access to the ProMix, and now ProMix has come out with a ProMix that's got the organic fertilizer mixed in with it that even makes it mow better.
Right. So we use ProMix. We've also used one called SunGrow. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, they several of
it
them.
It works
there.
Pretty good. So
you want to be careful. Excuse me a minute. You want to be real careful going to the big box store buying potting soil, because a lot of times what that is just ground up pine bark, and that does not lend itself well to vegetable transplants.
Yeah, so the last thing you want to do is go buy potting soil and try to start seeding there, and I'll tell you why. What will happen, your seeds will germinate, and you might get them up, and they might look like this, they might look real good. But what's going to happen as they grow older is with that potting soil, for some reason, those roots can't form a good root ball around it. Now, you don't want things to get root bound, but you want a good root ball to form so you can pull this puppy out of there and put it in the soil real easily. And if you use potting mix, as soon as you pull this up, everything's going to fall apart.
I've even made, back in the day, I've even made my own. It's peat moss, vermiculite, perlite. We used to use a little lime in there. Mm-hmm. That's the basic three components of this potting soil is good peat moss, Canadian peat moss, perlite, which is the white stuff you see there, and vermiculite. And all those have a purpose within that soil structure there of being porous and keeping it nice and fluffy and having water and nutrient holding capabilities.
So you want your seed start mix to be real fine like this. Like he said, you want it to have perlite, which is completely necessary. That's the white stuff. They actually, they crush volcanic glass to make that. And the vermiculite is from crushed mica. And you want it to be real fine so that root ball can form on it. So a good seed start mix, you got to start with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and like you said, you want it to be sterile. It can be too fine. One year we tried some, you better give Sammy some of that bacon. She's gonna get upset. One year we tried worm castings as a seed start mix, and it seemed like everything germinated, but it was so fine that you couldn't get a good root ball on it, and it just didn't work out. So we did a lot of experimentation with this over the years, and a good seed start mix, it needs to be labeled seed start mix, is the way to go. Let's talk about watering real quick. Okay. Now, hold on, let me get this one out of here. Let's put this one back down.
Ooh, that baby's heavy.
Yeah. So, when you are going to sow some seeds, you're going to start some seeds in some trays, and this is one of the trays from our new kind of smaller scale kits. That seed starting mix there takes a lot of water to get it wet initially.
It's a fancy word for that, but it whereas water does not absorb straightly into it. What's that word, hydrolysis?
Hydrophobic.
Hydrophobic.
Yeah.
But if you'll wet it several different times, and I like to use a little fine spray, wet it several times, three or four times before I plant my seeds in there, get it nice and moist and wet.
Yeah, so this right here, I wet it down beforehand. Is nice and moist. I wouldn't recommend planting in it dry, because then you just going, you risk flooding your seeds out and pushing those out and out of the cells, because you got to put so much water on it to get it wet. Ooh, initially. Let's talk about what we use to water here. So this is a Dram wand. Dram makes some of the best. They make good water hoses, nozzles, sprinklers. They just make good stuff. And there's two nozzles we use, and this wand does come with our premium seed starting kit. We use the shower nozzle, which is this one right here, which works really good. Once the plants are real young and tender, you might want to use one of these mist nozzles. They call it a foggit nozzle. So you can just take this one off, and you can put your foggit nozzle on there. And then once your plants get a little bit bigger where they can take a little heavier water, you can put the shower on there.
Now this comes in our seed start kit. We don't sell this right here, but you can find them on Amazon, they everywhere.
When I'm watering these things, I have a little technique I do. You don't want to be doing this right here, because you're just going to blow all your soil, wash it all away. So when I'm doing it, I hold it kind of way up here, and I shake it back and forth. And what that's really doing is it's taking away some of the velocity out of this nozzle head, and it's basically letting that water fall at the speed of gravity or whatever. And it's kind of dampening that, so you're not splashing soil everywhere. You're not making a mess. Your seeds are going to stay in the one place. So when you're watering, you know, be careful with it. Kind of hold the wand up and let it fall down on there.
So the next thing we do after we get it nice and moist, it's ready to make preparations for that seed going in there, ain't it?
That's right. That's right. Now you can do this several different ways.
Boom, 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 boom. Go ahead.
I see people use a pencil, dowel rod, everything, but you take your fingers, and that is the quickest way to make your dibbles, no matter what tray you're working with there.
Try to get it in the middle of the plant, middle of the cell. If you don't, ain't no big deal, but you can, by putting the hole in the seed starting cell, kind of lets you know where you're putting your seed in the middle of that tray.
And that's another reason to wet it beforehand, is because if you don't, if this is dry and you poke a hole in it, it's going to cave right back in. If you wet it beforehand, you're going to be able to form a lot more solid indention there. So let's talk about planting depth real quick. And I got some sugar pod peas here, which will be quite handy to get started. And once these come up, we can grow them out. So you want to plant, on average, twice as deep as the diameter of your seed. Now, when we're doing real small stuff like broccoli, cauliflower, like we showed you earlier, I don't make very deep an indention at all. Just kind of press down on it, and then you're going to dust over the top lightly. If you're working with a bigger seed, like a pea seed, you make a little deeper hole. So let me go and put these in there, and you can be talking to them about it.
Well, that's pretty good right there.
We're going to put our pea seeds in here. Those sugar snaps.
Now, believe it or not, the commercial greenhouses, to cover this up, use just perlite. I've never had nobody explain to me why they do that, because in my mind it didn't make sense, but that's what they do. We, however, don't do that because we don't buy perlite by itself. But they have a machine that comes through there and just puts perlite there on top.
And they get excellent germination.
We just used the regular mix that we put in there and sprinkled it on top.
So this process, I like to put me some in a cup or a bucket, and you want to get it real fine. Okay, you don't want any chunks here. And you just want to sprinkle it lightly there. And one more reason for wetting this stuff beforehand, forgot to mention, is you can actually see where your cell's at. If you don't wet it down and you just got soil everywhere, it's going to be hard to tell where your cells are actually at. So we're just going to lightly cover these in. I don't want to cover up so I can't see where my cells are.
I see it right there.
Yeah, but it doesn't take much. And then we'll wet that down again, and you're good to go.
Now you want to wet, when you wet this down again, you want to wet, wet, and we wet. Did I say that right? Yeah. We wet. You want to keep it.
Now you don't want to just flood it constantly for 2 minutes, but you'll wet it a little bit, let it soak in, wet it a little bit, let it soak in. You kind of got to baby it to start off. Now, in this case here, we do have a bottom tray here, okay? But until those seeds germinate and a root forms towards the bottom there, this bottom tray is just a water catchment tray, okay? So you got to water this thing from the top to get that seed wet to germinate and also give it time for a root to get to the bottom there. Once that root gets to the bottom, then you can start feeding it from the bottom like that. But if you just was to just put water in the bottom here and not water it from the top, you wouldn't have a whole lot germinating.
Now, when you're dealing with crops such as beets, radish, things like that, and you live in our type climate, it's not really that important that you use a heating mat underneath it, because those type crops will germinate in coolish type weather. If you're using tomatoes, peppers, or anything that's a summer crop, it's important that you have that heat underneath it to help with the temperature for the seed to germinate a lot better, more germination, and quicker.
He switched gears on me talking about heat mats there all of a sudden.
Caught me off guard. So, cornbread did that to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, talking about heat, a lot of people ask, should I put it on the heat tray or not? Down here where we are, because we have a greenhouse, but the only time we use a heat mat is in the spring, really, and we use it for tomatoes, peppers, eggplants. Well, now we do our watermelons from transplants, we do our okra from transplants, and we do a lot of pumpkins from transplants. So those six crops, pretty much, we might use it on some early sunflowers or zinnias, but those six crops are pretty much what we use on the heat. In the fall, it's plenty warm enough, we don't use a heat mat. Right. We really don't want, I didn't use a heat mat on any of this cauliflower or anything.
No.
All that stuff germinates in fairly cool soil. So mostly your nightshades, watermelon, heat-loving crops we do that with. Let's talk about, we talked about planting depth, let's talk about lighting real quick. Now, if you're growing these inside, we grow our stuff outside and the sunlight is fairly equally diffused. But if you're growing these inside and you've got lights, ceiling lights right on top of it or overhead of it, then your light intensity is a little different. It's not as equally distributed, so to say. And what's going to happen is when these plants get up, they're going to see that light and they're going to try to climb to it.
Not only that, but they're going to get leggy.
Yeah.
They have a lot of people talk about leggy plants. 99.9% of the time, it is a light issue.
Now, my buddy Jason over at Cog Hill Farms, he's got it figured out, the cheap way to do the indoor grow light thing. So instead of spending a lot of money on expensive grow light kit and all this apparatus, what he does, you go to hardware store, big box store, and you buy LED shop lights. Okay, they make them in a little, on a little rail like that.
And he brings them down close to the plant.
Okay, the trick is, according to him, and I've seen him do this successfully, you've got, the bulb color has to be natural daylight. Can't be yellow bulb, it's got to be the real bright white natural daylight LED bulbs. And then he puts a stack of, say this is his tray, he puts a stack of books over here, a stack of books over here, lays the light on top of it. And then when the seeds germinate and they start growing, he needs to make it taller, he just adds another book here, adds another book here. It's a real simple design and it works really well for him.
Yeah. So economical too.
Yeah, LED shop lights, you just got to get the right bulb color. Water and frequency. We talked about a little bit about water and how we water. One of the common mistakes I see people make is they don't water these things enough. Even if it's cold outside, they really need to be watered two or three times a day.
Let me touch on a little something here while you're talking about watering. If you look underneath our seed starting, both every kit that we sell, you see these are pretty good size, I don't know if you can see it or not, these are pretty good size hole underneath these trays for the drainage. That's the reason solo cups, excuse me, had a little cornbread.
Bless you.
That's the reason solo cups and some of these homemade apparatuses don't work as well, because they don't have a big enough drain hole down there. When that water gets through there, you got to get it through that plant and get it out of it so it don't sit around and cause disease problems. So you need good drainage, but you need frequent water.
Yeah, I would say until seeds germinate, if you're bottom watering or plan to bottom water, you need to be watering these things at least twice a day until that root can reach the bottom. Now, once your roots reach the bottom, you can feed from the bottom. That's going to greatly decrease your water frequency, but it's going to take a minute for them to get down there.
One for me, one for Sammy.
Yep, Sammy snuck in as a guest visitor on the show.
Next time, we're going to have to get some good sweet tea in here.
You thirsty?
Cornbread working on me a little bit.
Lastly, let's talk about fertilization. Let's can you bring that tray back up here? And I meant to bring one, but I didn't get brass siphon mixer. So these cauliflower plants right here are pretty close to putting on what we call true leaves. So they got their first set of leaves right here. Their second set of leaves, which you can barely see there, will be called the true leaves. Once that second set of leaves becomes prominent, we can see them real good. That's when to start pushing these guys, putting the
I would do it pretty quick.
Now, couple different ways you can do this. You can I like to recommend about a teaspoon to a tablespoon of 20-20-20 in a gallon watering can and put it on top of them. I would chase that with plenty of water. You don't want to leave a lot of fertilizer residue on these leaves that can burn them. You can do it with a water can. We've also got the siphon mixer we use. And we've even been known, if we're really wanting to push them, we'll just make a real dilute mixture with that siphon mixer and basically fertilize them every time we water.
Now you gotta keep in mind, these things have just put out roots. They're nice and white and delicate. So you can't over fertilize these babies, you will burn them. So less is better than more when they first starting out. Now the bigger the plant gets and the more roots it gets on there, the more fertilizer it can stand.
You can see there, those are just now getting some roots towards the bottom there. Still a good little ways to go.
But you'll be surprised what a good fertility program will do on these right here. So good warm weather and good fertilizer, these babies will pop.
Yeah, a lot of times you can push them as hard as you want to push them. If you're a little behind and need to get to your planting date, you can do like we do sometimes and just fertilize them every time you water. Just want to do it at a lower rate when you're spoon feeding like that. Okay, if there are any other questions we didn't answer about seed starting, put those in the comments and we'll be glad to get to them on next week's show. I tried to cover what we hear most frequently, what people ask.
And what we have success with.
Right. And what we have had success with. Seed starting is one of those things, how do I explain it? You can't get to what I call willy-nilly with it. There's a certain way to do it. And if you do it that way, you're going to be successful. If you try to go off the radar with your techniques and stuff a little too much, you're not going to have a lot of success. There's a certain way to do it, and I promise you, if you do it the way we show on our videos, you'll be successful.
I can't remember the last time we had a failure. We lost a tray of plants.
Yeah, I can't either.
I can't remember.
And that's not to be bragging.
No, it's just it's easy once you get the hang of it.
But once you realize there's a certain way to do it,
yeah,
and do it that way every time. You can't get in a hurry. You got to do it the right way, and you'll get good results.
Let's get in some questions.
Let's get in some questions from last week's show. And if we answer your question on this week's show, send us an email to cussserve@hosstools.com and we'll send you a nice little prize.
Question number one comes from Jesse Scott. Will y'all be carrying any of the ball zucchini? There's a yellow, medium green, and a pale green type. They sell well here at market in coastal North Carolina.
Well,
Speaking of that, Jesse.
We've got one variety of round zucchini we call eight ball squash. I would say it's a darker green one. These things, if you've never tried them, folks out there, all you got to do is cut these babies in half, throw them on the grill. They are fine to eat. They have really good texture.
That cornbread working on it.
And they're, I'd say, a little bit bigger than a pool ball. They'll get real big, but yeah, they're best picked a little bit bigger than a pool ball. So we have, one variety of eight ball squash. I could see us maybe adding the yellow ones and stuff in the future, but we do have one of these currently. Number two comes from Jerry Georgopoulos, and he says, talking about cutting and drying potato seed pieces, you make no mention of treating the pieces with fungicide to prevent dry rot, etc. Do you use any fungicide?
I have. I've used dry sulfur before, and I've used fir bark dust before, and I just don't have any problems. I've not used a lot, but I have used it before, and I can't tell any difference between when I use it and when I don't. That being said, my ground is on high ground. I don't have any problems with them flooding out, rotting in soil. Pretty much, I may have lost one crop in 20 years. I don't have any problems. I cut them up, let them sit for a few days, heal over, and I plant them. If you feel more comfortable using dry dust, sulfur, or a fir bark dust, by all means, I don't think it's going to hurt. What the sulfur and the fir bark dust does is it lowers the outer surface pH and makes those diseases, makes an environment where the diseases cannot live. Makes you feel better, or if you think you may have a problem with rot, by all means do it. I don't have an issue with it. It doesn't seem to be a thing for me. So no, I do not. 90% of the time. Every now and then I will, just to see if it makes a difference. I have not noticed any difference.
I would say if you've got time to cut them up, let them properly heal, you really don't have nothing to worry about it. If you're in a bind, rain's coming, you forgot to cut them up and you're wanting to cut them and plant them in the next day or two, that stuff really helps. If you got time to let them heal properly.
I can see that. I've always let mine heal up, so I
Yeah.
I can't tell the difference in it.
Okay.
Question number three comes from Ann Grant. She says, where are your two 88C trays on the website?
Ah, got a little surprise for y'all. Can you put set that away one more time? So, we'll bring this out. People have seen this before. This is our bottom tray for our same tray I just showed you with the cauliflower in, our 162 tray that fits in there. Okay, we've had these for a while. We just got a new shipment in. We can't hardly
keep
them.
Folks, they've been flying out of here.
Those things are popular. So we just added, and I'll let you hold that one so we can show it. This guy right here, which I have trialed and I like, this is a 338 cell tray. So it's the same size as the one you're holding there. It is a little heavier because you got more cells, you got more plastic there. It is just as durable. If not, I believe this one might hold up better the stomp test than that one would because you got more plastic there. The cells on these are nice and deep. You got a nice big hole at the bottom. I have grown so far leeks in here, onions in here, does really good with those. I grew rutabagas in here. I do beets in here. The commercial guys around here do broccoli and cabbage in there. I haven't, but you certainly could. Because there's 338 cells, you got less soil per cell. It takes a little more finesse to grow them in here than it does there. They take a little more regular water. They'll dry a little quicker because you've got less soil per plant. But these right here are awesome.
You can grow near about twice as many plants the same footprint as you can. At least not quite, but almost twice as many.
Yeah. I wouldn't grow anything in here that really, like, I wouldn't do lettuce in here, anything that's going to really kind of have a lot of foliage going out because you're going to lose some airflow.
Yeah, my thoughts on that is I would use this one for tomatoes, peppers, and watermelons.
Pumpkins.
And I would use this for the smaller things, like you mentioned, as onions, leeks.
Yeah, worked great for onions and leeks. So we got that. It fits this bottom tray too. They might be on the website as of the airing of this video, if not in the next few days. So the 338s there, you can check those out.
Now, if you think you may want some of these bottom trays, or you think you may want some of these 162s, I can tell you from firsthand experience, because I've had my rear end back there trying to get them out. We got a truckload in yesterday, and we three pallets down right now. They are flying out of here just as quick as me and those boys in the back can pack them. They're going out of here. Now, I know for a fact we're going to run out of these right here. So if you think you want some, you better get them.
Now, we can get more when we run out, but they have to come on a container from
Overseas. England's where they're made at.
And so they take a little while. We will run out of these. We have run out of those, just got them back. We got one or two big pallets of the 338s. We can get more of those, but we're subject to run out of those too. So seed starting season's here. If you need your stuff, you get it while we got it.
In the last 24 hours, three skids or pallets of these that went out of here.
Yeah, that's a lot of seeds being started all around the country. We got one more question here, and that's from James Billingsley. And he says, enjoy the show and all the info. Have muscadines, black and blueberry plants. Ison's Nursery, where I got my blackberries, recommends 10-10-10, but he wants to use our 20-20-20 with the drip tape. How much 20-20-20 should he use to get the equivalent amount of fertilizer as the recommended amount of 10-10-10?
It's easy and complex at the same time. So you want to use half as much 20-20-20 as you would 10-10-10 because it's twice the strength.
10 times 2 is...
Simple math. 20-20-20 is twice the strength of 10-10-10. So you want to use half as much on recommendation. Now, when using a liquid water-soluble fertilizer versus a straight granular fertilizer, then it gets a little bit different. You want to spoon feed and put more applications out with that 20-20-20 than you do the 10-10-10. You can probably put the recommendations, I think most time on the recommendations on the 10-10-10 granules, you split it in 2 to 3 applications along the plant's growing cycle during that growing season. On the 20-20-20, heck, I'd break that up even more than that, even 6 or 7, maybe 8 times. So give it a little bit at a time. Recommendations half as much. Just break your fertilizations up a little bit more and hit it. And what you'll find is you'll have a lot better results.
That's what I'm going to do this spring. I got my Arkansas Prime Freedom blackberries on drip tape, and I've read that them babies like to be fed, and babies, so we're going to spoon feed them. Once they start growing, we're going to spoon feed them and push them a little bit.
Well, if you think about it, would you rather eat a big old pot of collard greens and cornbread in one sitting, or would you rather have three different meals in one day?
Yeah.
Plants are the same way.
You get plumb sorry sitting around eating collards and cornbread.
Swell up.
All right, folks. That is going to do it for tonight's show. You know what I was thinking the other day? And this may be our claim to fame one day. We have, even though we've only been doing this close, not quite 2 years, we are the longest running weekly father and son gardening show out there.
There you go.
And who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
You know, yeah. I think this is episode 85 or so. So when we get on 100, our 100th episode, we'll have to do something real big. But
That
it'll be a little while before we get there. But we thank y'all for watching every week.
We sure
and,
do.
Don't keep us a secret. Tell all your buddies about us. And old Joel Henderson in Oklahoma said him and his buddies, they all watch it on Thursday and then get up on Fridays and talk about it.
Yeah.
So
we hope it's as much fun to you as it is to us, because we absolutely have a blast and we love what we do, and I'm sure you do too.
That's right. All right, so I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to be talking about, lost my train of thought there. We're going to be talking about crop planting strategies and crop rotations, and talking about which crops are in the same family, what you can plant behind one, what you don't want to plant in the same area in consecutive years, and a little bit of that planting strategy we do. So we'll catch up on that next week. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you guys then.
Take care.